Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In any relationship, each passing day could be a little bit better than the last or a little bit worse. If each passing day is unpleasant or even worse than the last day, don't expect it to get any better. I'm going to talk more about that during the break, so I hope you get a chance to listen. Stick around.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. I'm going to read you a message that I received that I've read once already, you know, off the air, and I'm not sure how to answer it. I'm really not sure. I really don't know if I have a good answer, mainly because there are people in the world that show up in a certain way that will change and become different people. Let me explain. There are people in the world like kids that will show up as they are, whether they're 10, 15, 17. They have a certain view of the world, and that view changes with every experience they have. And as their views change, they change, and the way they show up in the world changes. The way they talk to people changes. The friends they have sometimes change. Their interests change. All kinds of things happen when you're a kid, and when you grow up, you have different tastes, you have different styles, you go through different trends. So that's one type of person that can change. Another type of person that can change, and I'm not equating these two, are addicts. An addict can show up and be one person one day and an entirely different person the next. Usually what happens with some addicts is that they go back and forth. With kids, they're usually the same, and then they shift into something else, whether it's months or years later. But I'm telling you this because there are certain people in our lives that will not show up in a certain way, so we don't know how to necessarily be around them or communicate with them, and we try our best. You can try your best to talk to an addict when they are under a heavy influence of a substance. You can try your best, and maybe some will be able to communicate well and some won't. When they're off the substance, you can probably communicate with them. But when the substance takes over again and they get under the influence again, you're not going to have the same conversation. And in fact, you may have an entirely different conversation, and neither one will have ever taken place later on, if that makes sense. You can have a conversation with an addict, whether they're sober or under the influence, and then later on they could say, well, that conversation never took place, and it may be true for them. Just depends on how much they do, how much of the substance they ingest or inject. But with kids, they're going through childhood. They're going through life for the very first time. They're learning new things as they grow older, and they're pushing boundaries, and they're trying to figure out how to show up in the world, and they're dealing with lots of maybe traumas or trying to figure out where they fit. There's just so much that goes on in a kid's world that a lot of us forget about. I mean, maybe we don't, but if you have any dysfunctions today, you probably remember what happened when you were a kid, because as a kid, you developed those dysfunctions. If you had any type of toxic people in your life, you probably developed some sort of dysfunction or coping mechanism and now are doing things in a way because that person existed in your life. So with kids, you're going to get the gamut. You're going to get everything under the sun with certain kids. They're going to do things that you wish they wouldn't. And remember, you were a kid. You were a kid too. I look at my past and I cringe at some of the stuff I believed and some of the stuff I did. And I wish I hadn't done it. And then when you grow up and you're more mature and you become an adult and you are now, quote, wiser to the world and in the world, you can look at kids and go, whoa, they're being so stupid, or they're being so immature, or they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And then you want to discipline them or tell them that they're wrong. Yet we did a lot of that stuff, if not more, sometimes. So we see kids doing the things that we used to do, or maybe they're doing other things because they have access to other things, and that really bothers us as adults. And when that happens, maybe there's nothing we can do, because if you say, don't do that, as a kid, they're probably going to say, hey, you told me not to do that, which makes me want to do it. If you tell me not to, I will. If you tell me no, that must mean I should do it because I'm missing out on something. I'm making some of this up, but maybe it's not too far from the truth. Kids want to do what they want to do. They want to push limits. They want to experiment and experience as much of the world as they can and soak it all in, because now is the time. Living in the present, not thinking about the future, very present-minded, very present moment. You'd think it was a mature way to be, being in the present moment. That's what we're taught. We should be very present-minded, very present moment. But you know what happens if you don't have the wisdom of life and everything that can happen to you and everything that will happen to you if you don't do certain things or you do certain things. Sometimes present moment thinking is very risky. I'm not knocking present moment thinking at all. I love present moment thinking. But I also think that you have to have some sort of experience under your belt in order to be present moment, so that you don't make huge mistakes that could affect your future and even take away your future. And I don't want that to happen. I don't want anything like that to happen. Of course, nobody does. Nobody wants anyone to take away their future. But, you know, kids, they do things that are sometimes very risky. And sometimes they just appear risky to us because we know better. We think we know better. We're adults. We're supposed to know better. But, you know, a lot of us are big kids too. We just have learned what has and hasn't worked and made sure that we aren't doing what doesn't work anymore. Neither here nor there, because the message I'm going to read, like I said, I may not have an answer to, but I wanted to give that little preamble before I read this so I could have maybe a foundation to go on. And I'm just going to go ahead and read this message and see what I come up with. I've already read it once and I have a thought on it, but if something else comes to mind, I will share it now. The message goes, recently I took an opportunity to speak with a good friend of mine about the things that I have been going through with my husband. As I started describing some of the behaviors and how it all made me feel, she broke down and said there are an uncanny number of similarities with her interactions with her teenage daughter. Walking on eggshells, feeling boxed in, feeling drained. Her daughter is uber smart. She's a young teenager and has developed a style of continuously lying to her parents and about her parents to her friends. She argues and asks for her mom's opinions, and when those are given, she belittles those opinions and blames her mom for not having her best interest in mind. There are many specific examples, but I suspect this is an instance where the child is unconsciously engaging in emotionally abusive behaviors. I advised my friend to seek professional help, not only for her own sanity, but for her daughter's as well. And I was curious as to your thoughts. All right. Thank you for sharing that. And rereading this, I'm not coming up with too many more insights. Yes, it's a great idea to get professional help always if she can do that and wants to do that. At the same time, this girl, I think she said she was like 14 or 15. She's a young teenager, and she is now reaching that point where she thinks she knows how the world operates and how the world works. And because she's smart, she may know how to manipulate the world to work for her. If I were in this person's shoes, this mom's shoes, I think it would be very difficult, because I know that if I try to discipline her, which you may have to do, you may have to discipline and say, look, you're grounded. Look, you can't see your friends. Look, this is how it is. I have a feeling if she did that, that she'd be sneaking out the window at midnight anyway. I hate to say that, because maybe that's not true. Maybe I'm not giving this mom or this girl enough credit. But if this is what's happening now, then it's quite possible that the mom never established, I don't know, good boundaries, never really gave her discipline when she was younger. Or if she did, this is the young girl rebelling. And maybe this is part of it. This young woman may be rebelling. Maybe, you know, you didn't mention a father in the picture. Maybe she's rebelling because she blames mom for the father not being in the picture, and she doesn't know how else to express herself. So this is how she's doing it. She's lying, and she's lying about her mom or her parents. You did mention her parents. So if the father is in the picture, I would like to know how both mom and dad treat their daughter and how they treat each other. How does mom treat dad? How does dad treat mom? If they treat each other great and they have a healthy relationship, then all right, that might not be it. If they treat their daughter as a young adult instead of a child, that might be a course to take. Maybe that's something they have to think about, because the smarter the child, the faster they grow up. Or they grow up even when they're not that smart. They just reach that age where they believe they know how the world works. And if that's the case, then we have to put, and this might be something that might be disagreed with, I don't know, but we might have to put more responsibility in the child's lap. This is something I've seen happen in different areas of psychology and different stories I've read, because I can't really comment on this from personal experience, except I had younger brothers and sisters. But when you put more responsibility in someone's lap, be it a child or an employee or coworker that maybe isn't doing that great a job, when they get more responsibility, they might tend to grow up really fast because they feel like they're being trusted. So that could be something that could possibly be a direction to take, is to actually trust the child, even though the child or young woman is lying. Yeah, that's, you know, I watch a lot of Judge Judy, and Judge Judy says you can tell when a kid's lying because their lips are moving. I can't say that's true. You know, not all children lie, but in her experience, I guess she's got 40 plus years in family court. She's seen a lot of children, and apparently a lot of them lie. So she's used to it. And if you know it's going to happen and you don't expect the truth, it might be easier. Maybe not, but it might be easier to just to know that they're going to lie. Okay, that person lies, but they're also a kid. This is just like I set up in the beginning. A kid is going through the stages and phases of childhood, moving into adulthood, going through puberty, going through the teenage years, feeling the hormones and the sexuality and all this stuff is happening, and they have to learn it all for the very first time. And that can be a lot of stress. That can be a lot of pressure. That can be a lot of excitement. There's a lot going on in a kid's life, and a lot of adults don't see it the same way as kids do. Kids see all this stuff happening at once, and they feel so A lot of them feel so misunderstood. And if you feel misunderstood, you're going to push limits. You're going to rebel. You're going to do these things that adults don't agree with. You're going to lie. You're going to manipulate. You're going to have behaviors that not a lot of people agree with. And people are going to look down on you. And because they're looking down on you, you're going to be more rebellious. So what is the answer? You know, I do think that the parents can just say, you know, we've had our differences and I'm sorry. This is what I'd like to do. I would like to give you the responsibility of blank. I don't know what that means. I'm not saying that you give her chores. Maybe that's a good idea too, because, you know, when they do chores, they learn good work habits and they can learn ethics and they can learn all kinds of stuff from doing that kind of thing. But perhaps it's a lie that you know she's telling, and the mom or dad says, okay, we're going to trust you. They don't rebel against her. They don't fight against it. They say, we're going to trust you. What you're telling us, we're going to trust you, because I think we spend a lot of time fighting against each other, and I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to trust you. And then leave it at that. And then the young woman will feel like someone's in her corner. Because sometimes, this is my belief, sometimes kids will challenge the adults around them just to find out how the adult is going to show up. They may not do this consciously. They may do it very unconsciously. But sometimes I believe the children or young adults in our lives will challenge us to see how we'll show up. And are we going to answer the challenge the way they expect or the way they hope that we'll show up? Because I guarantee you, if a kid came up to you and said, I just broke your car window, what do you think about that? And if you said, you son of a, I can't believe you broke my car window. Why would you do that? You are so vindictive. You did this on purpose, didn't you? I guarantee you, if you respond like that, and the kid expected you to respond like that, it reinforces what they already think of you. I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be angry. I'm not saying any of this stuff. I'm just saying that if they have a preconceived notion about how you'll respond or react to things, and you choose to react or respond different than what they think you'll do, you might start changing their trajectory. You might start changing their future. You might start changing things in a way that brings you closer. So if you said, well, that's all right, you know, we'll figure it out. I'm sure it was an accident. And they look at you funny and they think, what? They're not going to yell at me? They're not mad at me? What the heck? Why aren't they yelling at me? Why aren't they mad at me? And maybe they'll say that. Well, aren't you going to yell at me? Maybe they did it on purpose. Aren't you mad at me? And if the other person says, well, you know, I wish it didn't happen. I wish you didn't do that. I feel really bad that it's broken. But, you know, you had your reasons, and I'm just going to assume that it was a good reason. So, you know, we'll figure this out. What? That's not how it's supposed to go. And believe me, I know every child is different. Anyone that tried this, they're going to get a different response from the child. My point here isn't that you accept bad behavior and just allow it to happen. My point is that you determine how you'd normally react and react differently. Because when you react differently, you won't meet their challenge. You will surprise them. And this might go both ways. If you normally react in a kind and supportive way and they don't change, it might be time to act in a highly disciplined way and ground them. I don't know. It's your kid. I don't know. But I do know that when you show up for young adults the same way over and over again, they usually expect it. And when you show up the same way over and over again, it reinforces what they already know. With this friend's daughter, you know, she says she may be showing up unconsciously emotionally abusive. That could be true, but where did she learn this? That would be a question that I would have, is I would want to know where she learned this behavior, and is she witnessing it in her own family or somewhere else? You know, kids can figure this out on their own as well, but there's usually some sort of role modeling, because if her parents have been experiencing what this woman who wrote to me, her and her husband has been experiencing. There's, you know, some walking on eggshells, feeling boxed in, feeling drained, etc. Then this young woman is going to have behaviors that she learned from them. I'm not saying she couldn't have developed these behaviors on her own, but that can happen too. Now, there's another angle to this, and being a parent is hard. Sometimes it's very, very hard because the kid's going to do what they want to do, and we just hope they stay safe. We just hope they don't take too big a risk, and we hope they come out of it okay. But the kids are often going to do what they're going to do. So what we have to do is try to be the best role model, and that includes showing them how not to act by being the way you want them to be when they're older. What does that mean? She wrote and said that this mom feels like she's walking on eggshells. She's feeling boxed in. She's feeling drained. You know, if you are walking on eggshells with your daughter's going to learn one of two things. One, that she can bully and intimidate anyone she wants. Or two, when she gets into a relationship, that it's okay to walk on eggshells and feel boxed in and feel drained. That's what she might and maybe will learn, unfortunately, is the way you show up is the way they become, or the opposite of what you are, typically. Sometimes it doesn't happen that way, but I've seen this go both ways. My stepfather was an alcoholic. That made me loathe alcohol. That made me loathe addictions. And it made me stay away from drugs and all kinds of things growing up, which, you know, is a good thing, of course. But I went in the opposite direction. If he was mean, I was going to be nice. If he drank alcohol, I was going to be completely sober. And there was also some dysfunction there because I also was judgmental toward other people that drank alcohol or had any type of addiction. And I had to heal from that. I had to get through that and understand that there are people that drink recreationally and do other things recreationally, and that's their life. And if they're not a danger to me or people I love, it's their life and they're doing what they need to do. If they become a danger, then I might have to get involved or maybe not. But it took a while for me to heal over that. But my point is, I decided to go in the opposite direction of my stepfather. Now, my mom, she was the people pleaser. She let people steamroll her. She was the neutralizer, the balancer, the fixer, the rescuer. She did all of this stuff. That was my role model. That's who I became. I became the people pleaser. I became the person that didn't have any boundaries. I let people walk all over me, and I was afraid to confront and afraid to say no, because that's what she did. That's who I learned from. So when I see a message like this, and I see a parent who feels like she's walking on eggshells and feeling drained after conversations, this parent needs to find her power. This parent needs to step into her power and be confident about who she is inside and not let her own child make her feel like this, not because she should have power over the child, but she should be a good role model for the child and show up the way she wants her child to show up. And also, maybe she could find some positive aspects about how her young adult daughter is showing up, because her daughter is very smart and her daughter seems to have a strong head on her shoulders. That could be encouraged. I read a story once where this man brought his young daughter to a psychiatrist, and the man said, "You need to fix her. She's a problem. She's belligerent. She stands up to me. She's always rebelling, and she's always talking back. You need to fix her, or this just isn't going to work out." And the psychiatrist looks up at the father, then he looks at the young woman, and then he looks at the father again and says, "Wow, it must feel really good to know that your daughter has a strong constitution, she's very confident, and she would be able to stand up for herself if anybody got the best of her. It must feel really good to know that." And the author goes on to say that the daughter just smiled because she felt like someone was on her side, And he could see that the dad was very difficult to deal with, at least for the daughter. But, you know, maybe he was just frustrated. He didn't know what else to do. But what he was doing was reinforcing aspects of the daughter and making them positive, saying how wonderful it was to have these qualities, the same qualities that the father was finding to be a problem. And so that really helped build rapport with the daughter. And then after that, you know, I'm not sure what happened, but I think from that point on, the daughter was more open and willing to listen and try to work through the problems because she felt supported. And I'm not saying that the daughter from this message isn't feeling supported, but maybe she isn't. Maybe there's a part of that. Maybe she feels neglect in some way. Maybe she was angry about something and it's never been resolved. This is why I was asking if the parents were getting along okay. Did something happen in their family that was never resolved or talked about? Is something being brushed under the rug? You know, this is something that the mom may have to have a conversation with her daughter about. Ever since you were 12, you've been angry. Tell me what's on your mind. Tell me what you're angry about. You know, lay it all on the table. Be honest with me. Don't be afraid to say anything you want. With that kind of free pass, hopefully the daughter just lays it out. And hopefully the mom can just listen, keep her mouth shut, keep her ears open, try to be calm, and just be a safe place. Create that safe zone for the daughter to express herself. And hopefully the daughter will express what's going on. Maybe there's something in there that she's holding in, that this is the reason she's lashing out or lying or whatever. There could be something she's been upset about for a long time, and it might need to be said. So I think I'm going to leave it right there. There's all kinds of directions we can go with this. I know very little about the situation, and there could be many ways to tackle this. I am not an expert in child psychology, but that's the information I'm going to share with you today. I hope it helps. I thank you for sharing this, and I wish you the best. And, you know, as far as your relationship with your husband, I didn't read the beginning of the message, but it sounds like you're listening to Love and Abuse, my other podcast. And keep listening, because there's a lot of information there that is going to help you through whatever you're going through as well. Because I don't want you walking on eggshells or feeling boxed in or feeling drained or any of that stuff. You need to be able to get through that, and you may have to stand in your power too. In fact, I just created my last episode of Love and Abuse as of this recording, and I wrote on the cover, never let anyone take away your power. Never let anyone take away your power. I think this is how kids feel. They don't want people taking away their power, so they come up with all kinds of ways to keep it, but not every way they come up with is healthy. It's not all friendly. It's not all honest. It's just a way to feel like they're in control of their lives. That's something we probably all want. Thanks again for writing. We'll be right back. Coming up next, I'm going to talk about something that I mentioned at the very opening of the episode. I hope it's helpful. Be right back. You know, something I've learned over the years is that every single step toward a commitment in anything you do either changes or amplifies something. Especially in romantic relationships, if you start seeing someone and you get closer and you agree to some sort of commitment, like, hey, now we're exclusive, and hey, now we're engaged, hey, now we're married. Every time you take a step into a commitment, it amplifies something or it changes something. A good example is someone who gets engaged might amplify their happiness. Oh, we're engaged. This is wonderful. You know, this tells me that they really, truly want to be with me, and it is solidifying our love and our happiness and our connection, and it just shows that we're going in the right direction. I think engagements typically do that. But I've heard from other people where engagements have done the opposite. It changed the other person, meaning when they got engaged, somebody changed, not for the better. They changed for the worst. And they turned into somebody that the other person didn't recognize. Fortunately, it was an engagement, so it was a little easier to get out of. But some people don't do that. Some people stay in a situation thinking that they could somehow work through it and fix things and it'll get better maybe before the marriage. This is something I see not too often, but quite enough to realize that there is a problem that needs to be addressed. I really hate calling it a problem, but it is. It's a relationship problem that happens, is that some people get into relationships and then they get engaged and then someone changes. So you're either amplifying something that's already happening. If things are good, they get better. So that's amplifying. Or you're changing something that is either good before and now it's bad, but it is rare that it was bad before and now it's good. In fact, I would say that when the change happens, it's usually something that was good and it turns bad. But there probably are exceptions to that. But the reason I'm telling you this is because it's important to understand that when something changes for the worse, you have to remember it's a step toward what will be. And some people may disagree with this. Some people may have different experiences. But in my experience with the people I've worked with, when something changes for the worse, you know, I'm talking about romantic relationships, but it can work in other scenarios too. When something changes for the worse, it usually continues down that path, especially after an engagement or a marriage. So if you have been a couple for a while and things have been going fine, but then you get engaged and it gets worse, that shows that you're closer to what it will be. And I know that's an unfair statement because is it true 100% of the time? I can't say it is. All I can tell you is if it doesn't amplify for the better, then it's probably going in the wrong direction. Or if it might stay the same. If it doesn't amplify for the better, or it doesn't at least stay the same with, you know, some positive aspect to it, then the direction it's taking, if it's going in the other direction, it's going for the worse, then what ends up happening is you're one step closer to where it's going to continue to go. And what is that destination? Because what ends up happening, let's just say when you're engaged and then you get married, now you have an even stronger commitment. And what was already bad now typically gets worse. This is not news I'm happy to share with you. I'm just telling you this so that you'll be careful when you step into deeper levels of commitment and it gets worse, it usually doesn't get better because the commitment locks you in and the person that's doing the bad behavior knows that they are safer to be themselves, which may include their bad behavior. So I hope you're not dealing with that. I hope you never have to deal with that. But the only reason I'm telling you this is because I want to mention the Mean Workbook over at loveandabuse.com. The Mean Workbook is a 200-point assessment that will help you determine the level of hurtful behavior, manipulation, emotional abuse in your relationship, especially if you can't figure out exactly what's wrong or what's going on. Sometimes it does have to do with deeper levels of connection and commitment because what's happening is you're getting closer to the vulnerable parts of people that some people are good at hiding, or they have put on a facade for a while, or they didn't know it was in there. Like some people get into a deeper relationship and then their emotional triggers become exposed because they become more vulnerable, and those emotional triggers bring out some bad behavior, some poor coping mechanisms or survival skills. So you have to determine as you go forward, as you get closer and deeper and more committed, are things getting better? Are they staying the same because they were good, or are they getting worse? Because if they are getting worse, I'm just giving you a heads up, you're better to assume that they will continue to get worse and go downhill from there. And again, it's not good news. I don't like to give you that news because a lot of people have hope that what they have will get better, but I've just seen too many instances where the deeper a relationship gets, the more connected and committed they get, and the amplifying or the changing of what goes on just needs to be paid attention to, because if it changes for the worse, I believe you're better off assuming that it's going to continue to get worse. And what do you do from there? That's why I talk about the Mean Workbook. That's why I have the podcast over at loveandabuse.com. I'm not here to break people up. I'm not here to encourage divorce. It's not that at all. I'm just preparing you and empowering you with information so that you don't get into a situation that feels impossible to get out of. And I want you to be armed with knowledge. You have to know what's going on. You have to see what's going on. The Mean Workbook helps you see what's going on. It helps you assess all the little behaviors that come your way and determine if you are getting drip-fed emotional abuse on a daily or weekly basis. And if you are, what's your next step? If this is something that you want to look more into, head over to Love and Abuse, listen to the podcast. And if you believe you need the workbook, check that out too. It's the same website, loveandabuse.com. I receive probably, 1,000 emails an hour. That's not true at all. I don't receive that many, but I receive a lot. And I want to let you know that if you've ever written to me in the past, 5 years, that I have read it. I have seen it. I may not have addressed it. I may not have replied, but I received so many that I just can't. And I eventually get to all of them. In fact, I will be getting to every single email that I've ever gotten because all the questions are relevant. They all apply. I just may not be doing it on this show. I may actually have another show coming out that addresses those questions that I haven't gotten to yet. But there's a lot to address. And the reason I'm telling you this is because it's interesting. I was going through a bunch of emails today and found that 99% of them are about relationships, romantic relationships. Some of them are about family relationships and children, like we talked about today. But 99% of the emails I receive are about romantic relationships. And that says a lot. That says that most of us can probably figure out a lot of other stuff that's going on in our life. But when we get into a romantic relationship, suddenly our brain is mush. Not everyone. I mean, some people can't figure out life in general as well. There's a lot of challenges that come into our lives that we need help with. But it is interesting that the majority of the emails that I receive are about romantic relationships. Why is it so difficult to be in a romantic relationship? There are thousands of answers to that question. I'm not asking that question. It's just, I'm putting that out there. Because we get into relationships and suddenly who we were can change. How we figured out problems can change. It's just that our hearts get in there. Our emotions are more tied up. And we become sometimes enmeshed and tangled and get so deep into a romantic relationship that it seems that our logic goes out the window. It doesn't really, but we can let it go out the window because we give so many chances. We allow people to get away with stuff because we care about them. There's a big difference between the stranger bumping into you in the store and not apologizing and your loved one bumping into you. It seems that we're more forgiving toward our loved ones. Hey, you bumped into me. Well, you were in the way. Well, that's not very nice. But then a few days later, you're thinking, well, they've been treating me nice, so I guess that bump was just a mistake. How often do we do that with strangers? We usually think about it for months or years. I'm still thinking of that stranger that bumped me that day and never apologized. I'm still thinking about it. I'm stewing on it. But so-and-so bumped into me and didn't apologize, and I was more forgiving. I just let it go? Why? Why did you let that event go, but not the event with the stranger? There's many reasons that we do this, and it usually has to do with our heart getting involved and how we want to feel. Because when we get into a romantic relationship, we want to feel good with our partner. We want to feel connected. We want to feel emotionally involved, and we also want to feel loved and supported. And we know that we have to show up in a certain way in order to feel those things. And we know that they hopefully will show up in a certain way to feel the same things that we want to give. Because in a good, healthy romantic relationship, giving love feels as good as getting love. It's the emotional connection that brings us closer together, gets us into a deeper place with each other. And we become more forgiving and more willing to see past faults, more willing to see someone differently. We have a different perspective of them. And if they do something that irritates us or even hurts us, we're more likely to be forgiving. I'm not necessarily going in a certain direction with this segment, but I wanted to mention that because as I'm looking through all of these emails that I receive, and the majority of them are about romantic relationships, I think it's a good idea to consider how we treat others, how we treat strangers, how we treat friends, compared to how we treat the person that we love in our life. And the only reason I say that is because when I got into the relationship that I'm in now, you know, I had a series of relationships that they all ended, clearly, because I'm in a new relationship, but they all ended, and they were all my fault. They ended because of me. I wasn't always respectful. I wasn't always kind and honest, and I wasn't everything that I always aspire to be now. I was more manipulative. I was more emotionally abusive. I did things that I wish I didn't do. I made them feel bad. And over the years in each relationship, some of my partners, they got out sooner, and some of them waited longer, and some of them were more forgiving, and some weren't. They just said, nope, I'm not going to handle this anymore. And I say kudos to all of them. Kudos to all of them for seeing this behavior and stopping the relationships, because it would have continued to be an unhealthy situation for them and for me. This is something I talk about over at the Love and Abuse podcast at loveandabuse.com, where when you're in a toxic relationship, not only are you in a bad situation, but the most toxic, emotionally abusive person is also in a bad situation. The reason is because when they do bad behavior and you allow it, or at least don't make them accountable for it, they will believe that doing bad behavior isn't a bad thing or doesn't have any consequences. And I think that's a very important lesson to take into any relationship with anyone, romantic or not. When there are no consequences for someone's bad behavior, they are very, very likely going to do it again. And with the emotionally abusive relationships I talk about over on Love and Abuse, I often hear from people that say, you know, I'm crying. They see that I'm hurting. They see that they're hurting me. They know they're the ones causing these problems, yet they still blame me. They still do the behavior they do, and they never, ever stop. And I have to come on that show and say, I'm sorry, they're not going to stop. I really am. I don't like saying that, but if someone sees that you're hurting and sees that you're crying and understands that the pain that you feel is from them and they don't stop, they won't stop. This is why it's important to carry this lesson into any relationship that you'll ever be in. If you're in one now and someone does bad behavior or hurtful behavior, if there are no consequences for that behavior, they will likely not understand that it's unacceptable. And yes, I'm talking about your boundaries. I'm talking about understanding that even in romantic relationships where you are more forgiving and you are more generous with your toleration, you are more connected and emotionally invested in the relationship, even in the deepest of relationships, bad behavior must have a consequence. And I don't mean that if you're in a physical abuse situation or domestic violence situation, that you tell them, hey, you better stop or I'm going to hit you back. That's not it at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying in many unhealthy situations that aren't physical, that if someone continues to put you down, belittle you, insult you, offend you, embarrass you, make you feel bad, make you feel guilty, any of this stuff, romantic or not, if someone does that and they are allowed to get away with it and there are no consequences for their behavior, there's no reason for them to stop. Think about someone in your life that does bad behavior and they've not stopped doing the bad behavior, no matter how hurt or offended that you showed them you are. If you can think of somebody like that and they haven't stopped, it's very likely that the accountability wasn't there. I know. What is the accountability? What does that mean? You know, it's going to mean something different for every person in every situation. In my life, my stepfather was the unhealthy person. He was the toxic one. And no matter how many times he showed up in my life, he pretty much got away with anything. And I didn't like that feeling. I swallowed my anger. I was afraid of him. I swallowed my fear. I didn't say anything to him because, you know, this is what we're taught when we're kids. He's drunk. Just don't say anything. Try not to incite his bad behavior. That's what my mom taught all us kids, to just not incite his behavior and just wait for him to either pass out or sober up. But it usually started with passing out. After he sobered up, he was fine. And so I learned not to make anyone accountable for their behavior. And that's a terrible lesson to learn, because accountability doesn't have to mean getting back at someone or making them suffer. It doesn't have to mean that at all. It could mean you just get out of their lives. It could mean that when you do this, it hurts me, and if you don't stop doing this, I am going to leave. Or we're not going to be friends anymore, or I'm not going to work for you anymore, or I'm going to get a divorce from you, or something like that. And I know it's not always easy to do that. Sometimes it seems impossible. And sometimes we make impossible decisions to improve our lives. And it's very tough stuff, because some people, they can cause us to feel fear. They can cause us to think that maybe we have no choice and we just have to accept that behavior. There's always a choice. We just don't like the choices sometimes. And there's almost always a way to make someone accountable. With emotionally abusive relationships, I tell partners or spouses in romantic relationships that when they hurt you, you ask the question, do you realize you're hurting me? I think that's a fair question. Do you realize that when you do or say that, it hurts me? When you ask someone that question, it empowers them to discover that they're doing behavior that hurts you. It empowers them to do that. It gives them the option or the opportunity to change behavior that they may not have known they're doing. That's a wonderful opportunity for anyone. If you say that to someone and they say, well, no, I didn't know that was hurting you, the next question I talk about on that show is, now that you know that behavior hurts me, will you stop it? That's another fair question that empowers them to make a choice. It gives them the opportunity to show up differently. It allows them to see that their behavior is hurtful, and hopefully they will make a different choice to stop hurting you. I tell you what, if you ask that question and if they say yes or no, after that question is asked and after you say, now that you know you're hurting me, will you stop? If they don't stop, they will never, ever stop because there's no accountability. Unfortunately, with emotionally abusive relationships, the accountability is usually a separation of some sort. Because the only thing that they want is to keep the relationship, regardless if you're hurting or not. And that's what it is. Some aren't affected by your crying, by your hurting. Some aren't affected that their behavior hurts you. They just know that no matter how they act, you're still there. So they don't change. And so again, this is an important lesson to take with us, that when we don't provide accountability, we may not get any different behavior from them. And unfortunately, showing pain, showing that you're suffering, visibly crying in front of them is not enough for some people. And if it's not enough, it will never be enough. So if your visible suffering isn't enough for them to change, then it's time to question if showing how you're suffering in front of them is enough. You know, is it worth it? Because if nothing's changed, then the trend shows that it won't change, and it's just not worth it. It's just not worth showing your visible suffering in front of them. And it may be hard not to do that, because you are suffering if you're in a situation like that. And this happens in any type of relationship, any person that you know, friend, family, or romantic, that could be affecting your life in some way. With my stepfather, there was a point where he had to be held accountable. Not that he was always intrusive in my life, but you know, when I became an adult, I really didn't want him in my life anymore, and I always let him have his way. I always let him do whatever he wanted and get away with anything. So one day he shows up at my mom's door and I refuse to let him in. It was the first time I ever stood up to him. And it was also the first time I made him accountable for the way he's been showing up in my life and in my mom's life. And the fact that he couldn't gain access where he would just normally come in on his own and not really care how we felt about it. When I stopped that, it stopped. He stopped. He stopped showing up at my mom's house. My mom didn't feel so empowered. I mean, when he was around her and I wasn't around, she felt a little bit more people-pleasing and tolerant of his behavior. But I finally got to the point where I didn't want him intruding in my life anymore. And I finally said something. And, you know, my situation is different than a lot of other people. I'm taller and younger and stronger than this older guy. And I could probably take him if it really came down to that. But hopefully it never does. And I know that makes a difference, because some people don't feel physically capable enough to take that on. But at the same time, when I stood up to him and I said, no, you can't come into my mom's house, I actually expected to get punched. I actually expected a fist to come at my face, and that I was just going to have to take it. I mean, I wasn't going to get into a fist fight. I was going to take the punch, because I was done. I had enough. It was time. And sometimes you just have to make that decision. I'm not promoting fighting. I'm not promoting anything physical or aggressive. I'm just telling you, sometimes you reach your breaking point and you've had enough. And some people need to know where the line is and that they are no longer allowed to cross it. I don't know who this helps. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's somebody you know, but I wanted to share this because of all the emails I've been reading and all the relationship issues that I've been coming across, and hopefully this helps in some way, shape, or form in your life. Or if it doesn't, listen to the next segment. Maybe there's something good in there. But the next segment is really just my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words, which are coming up right after this. Be right back. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our financial backers. I call them the patrons of the week. Every week I like to read the names of the people that financially give to the show. And that is Christy, Meg, Andrea, Fuang, Christy, again, a different Christy, Walter, all wonderful people. Thank you so much. They are a few of the many people that give back because they find value in the show, and I am so grateful for them because it helps. It really helps keep the lights on, and we're very grateful. Thank you all. I appreciate you. If you find value in the show and you'd like to give back, head over to moretob.com, and you can choose to give a single donation or monthly. And if you're a monthly contributor in the patron program, I give back with private episodes, worksheets, and a video archive. Check it out over at moretob.com. And I mentioned the Love and Abuse podcast. You can check that out over at loveandabuse.com. If you're dealing with an emotionally abusive relationship, or you're just having a challenge navigating a difficult relationship in your life. So whether it's romantic, platonic, or family, if you leave many conversations feeling bad, find out if you're being emotionally abused by going to loveandabuse.com. And I also like to help people that find out that they're emotionally abusive and want to change. I do offer a program called Healed Being over at healedbeing.com. And many people are joining because they realize they don't want to hurt the people they care about anymore. They've learned that it will destroy their relationship, if not, has already destroyed their relationship. I went through a healing process myself. I have learned so much about how to heal myself and how to share the healing tools that I have learned about and have used and continue to use to this day because, you know, we all have emotional triggers and those triggers can be activated in a relationship. That's why I talked about relationships in the last segment. You know, we have these relationships that bring out parts of us that we may not have in our normal life. So when someone bumps into us in the grocery store, we may have a different feeling about that than when our loved one bumps into us in the kitchen. There might be an emotional trigger in there that when a loved one bumps into us, there should be a different approach. And if we don't get the response that we're looking for, or even if we do get the response, we might have an emotional reaction to it that creates a problem or makes things worse. There's all kinds of things that happen in relationships, which is why I like to tackle it from both ends, from the victim side of emotional abuse and from the perpetrator side of emotional abuse, because there are people that learn that they do things that maybe they shouldn't do or know they shouldn't do, and they just need help stopping the behavior and healing themselves to avoid carrying the burden of wanting to control or change other people. And that's what it is. It feels like a burden. It's a big weight to carry around, feeling the need to control or change other people. So that's over at healedbeing.com if you are looking for something like that. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I did get a message from someone in a relationship that said, "My husband is very opinionated and hard to confront or have a disagreement with. I know I have my issues too, but our disagreements often make me walk away feeling like I am the one who is wrong. I find myself apologizing for being upset and walking away angrier on the inside and don't feel anything is resolved for me. He makes the argument all about him and how I've made him feel. He is very good with words, so much that I am dumbfounded at how to stick up for myself and say what is bothering me. Can you help me?" Thank you so much for sharing that. Sorry you're going through that. That is difficult. First of all, definitely go to loveandabuse.com. Listen to my episodes over there. It's going to help you a lot, giving you lots of questions, including the ones I've asked on this episode. But number two is related to what I talked about in the last segment. What would you say or do with a stranger that did this to you, or even an acquaintance? That is the first question. What would you do or say to a stranger or an acquaintance that did something like this to you, that was very opinionated and made you feel wrong and responsible, and you couldn't get any closure, and they made the argument all about them? What would you do with them? I know what I would do. I would look at them and say, I don't need you in my life. I don't have enough space in my brain and in my heart for someone that treats me like this. I don't have it. I don't have the energy. Especially now, I'm 51. That's not old for a lot of people, but for me, 51 is reaching that point where I don't want any more drama in my life. I don't want to deal with that kind of drama. I want to relax. I want to start thinking about retirement someday. You know, that's 15 years down the road, whatever. But I'm at that point where I'm too old for drama. I don't want it. That's just me. I don't want the drama. So what do? I consider what's most important and start prioritizing that. Because to me, as I get older, it's very important that drama does not enter my life and that there's a certain level of respect from the people that I care about and for the people that I care about. If my girlfriend was, actually she is, she's very opinionated. My girlfriend is very opinionated. And we've had heated discussions, heated conversations before. But she's always willing to admit when she's wrong. And she's always willing to take responsibility for her behavior, except for one instance, but I won't talk about that here. It's just a disagreement. But for the most part, we get along even if we argue. We get along because we're both willing to give a little or a lot. And especially, we're both willing and able to step back instead of all this forward energy, step back when somebody says something that makes sense. Like if I know I'm right and she says, well, yesterday you said this, and I think to myself, oh, wait, I did say that. I will look at her and say, you're right. I did say that. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. I apologize about that. You're right. That was so hard to learn. It's so hard to learn to have this emotional freight train going forward at 100 miles an hour to stop that train and pull back all that forward momentum and say, you're right. I'm sorry. I take it back. You are absolutely right. I'm an idiot if I have to say that, if I feel that way. I'm sharing with you that, yes, what you just said is correct. And as soon as I do that, I feel her forward energy let go as well. There's no more forward bumping heads or throwing emotional daggers at each other. It just relaxes. And when it relaxes, we both back off, we both back down, and we feel better that we've come to some sort of resolution because one of us made a point and the other one understood that point and accepted, it's not defeat, but accepted a truth that they didn't maybe want to accept or didn't remember or thought differently about. But the point is, the pressure in that conversation is released and you're able to let it go or at least move on from there. You can make up in different ways, and that's good, and that's what we do. In this person's case, that's not what happens. It's always one person as the steamroller and the other person as the road. Her husband is steamrolling, being the dominant one, steamrolling over her regardless if she's right or wrong, because he wants to be right and stay right and keep her in a place of no power. That's how I see this. And that's why I asked, if this were a stranger, what would you do? And why do you allow it in a romantic relationship? You might say, well, we've been together for so long. We have so much invested with each other. And we've got the house and we got the kids and we got our finances all tied up. We've got so much that's enmeshed and entangled. So there has to be some give and take. We have to find balance because this is what happens. But this is what I see. I see a very unbalanced situation. I see someone that is dominating the conversations or arguments and someone who feels bad and probably continues to swallow anger and swallow sadness and continuing to just take this situation as it is, not knowing what to do and not knowing how to stick up for herself. And that's why I asked, what would you do with a stranger? Because if you take some of the resources that you have that aren't necessarily there in your romantic relationship and start applying them in your romantic relationship, you start to change things. And I know this is completely different, and I know it can be dangerous with the wrong person. I don't want you to put yourself in a dangerous situation. I'm only talking about relationships where you know that you can have these tougher conversations and you can make someone accountable, and it may cause a lot of emotional stress, but it's not physically dangerous to you or anything like that. So this is one of those pick your battles wisely kind of things. But for the most part, if you have known someone for a long time and they've been getting away with this over and over again, you may have to reach your breaking point and you may have to treat them like an acquaintance or a stranger and say, look, you need to back off. This is unacceptable. Every time we argue, you never take responsibility. You always make me the bad guy, and I've made good points and you never acknowledge or validate my points. You just want to crush me. That's how I feel. I feel like you want to crush me. And he may say, I'm not trying to crush you. I just know that what I know, and I know that I'm right, and I know this and I know that. That's what typically happens. We'll get stuck in the details. They'll bring up all these details. But what I do when it comes to this is go bigger picture. I zoom out. And the zoom out is just observing and recognizing, acknowledging, and focusing on how I feel. When I focus on how I feel, regardless of what they say, regardless of how clever their wording is, I can focus on how I feel and say, you know what? I know what you're saying sounds logical to you, but I'm just telling you what you're doing right now hurts me. It hurts me, and it makes me angry, and it makes me feel like I don't have a say. And in this case, he may say, well, yeah, but you were wrong, and this and this and this. This is where you go, you know what, you might be right, but I still leave these conversations angry. I still leave them hurt, and I feel like I'm not heard. I feel like I'm not respected. And again, he may say, well, I feel like I'm not respected. I feel like I'm not heard. And you can zoom right out again and say, well, I still feel this way. I still feel hurt. I still feel disrespected. So yes, you may feel those things as well. And I'm willing to talk about those things. I'm willing to address that stuff. But this is where I am. This is where I am when we have these conversations. And this is one of those things where you're saying, this is how I feel. And in your mind, you're thinking, do you even care about that? Does that even matter to you that I feel this way? That the person that you are supposed to live a long, happy life with feels this way? The person that you're supposed to love and cherish and care for and support and show respect and want to be happy, do you feel bad that she's not happy? Again, this is in your mind, but maybe you want to talk about that. Maybe you want to ask the question, does it hurt you that I'm not happy? Does it faze you at all? Then he may get into the details again. Yeah, but you did this and I know I'm right. Yeah, that may all be true, but right now I'm feeling so hurt and I want to feel good with you. I want to feel connected to you. I want to have a conversation with you and not feel like I've been steamrolled. That means that we both have an open mind and we're both willing to give and we're both willing to take responsibility for our behavior. But if you always blame me and always make me the bad guy, then it feels very one-sided and I feel hurt and I feel alone. And I don't want to feel alone in my relationship. And I know all this is very difficult to come up with on the fly and remember what I said, but this is why you go big picture. The big picture, or the zoomed out view, is, well, what do I feel in general? I feel angry. I feel sad. I feel disrespected. Whatever it is for you. And you just keep those in mind. I don't know how this is happening, but I know I feel angry and I know I feel sad and I know that we never reach closure and I walk away angry. And I definitely don't feel validated. I feel like I'm not listened to. So you want to make a list of all these things that you feel in the moment and then focus on those things. Because someone who cares for you is going to back off. Someone who cares about you is going to be more concerned with how you feel instead of being right. At least if there's love, you know, if there's love, that should be the priority. The love for you and wanting you to be happy, wanting you not to suffer, should be the priority. In my opinion, I think that's how it should work. Because overall, you could be angry, he could be angry, but hopefully afterward you can connect. And if you can't connect afterward, you're right, there is no closure. And you walk away angry and then you stuff that down and it slowly drives a wedge in the relationship, in the connection. And even that can be talked about. Every time we have this argument, I feel less attracted to you. I feel more distanced from you. I feel less loved by you. I feel less respected by you. And I'm just losing my connection with you. And it feels like that's what you want to do. Because every time I'm hurt, every time I'm crying, it doesn't seem to matter to you. You just want to be right. So that may be the direction you go. I don't know. But you do have resources inside of you that if a stranger or an acquaintance did this to you, you would have more resources from which to draw. And when you have those resources available, introducing certain components of those resources into a romantic relationship can start to bring certain levels of accountability, can start to bring certain levels of awareness, and show the other person that you're not going to be as tolerant of bad behavior anymore. Even if you can't describe how they're being bad or what exactly they're doing, because in the general view, how do you feel? All I know is that I feel angry every time we do this, and I also feel very sad, and even worse, more disconnected from you every time. So we need to talk about this. And in this case, if he says, well, there's nothing to talk about, I know I'm right. After you said something like that, if you say, I'm feeling more disconnected from you every time, and he still says, well, I know I'm right, then him being right is more important than creating a loving connection with you. He has lost the big picture. And if he can't see that big picture, then this is one of those things that will never change. That is like the worst news I could give you, but that's typically what happens. If it's not changing after he sees that you're hurting and you're feeling more and more disconnected, and if that isn't enough incentive for him to stop doing what he's doing or at least work on his behavior or his anger issues or his emotional triggers, then it's not going to change. And maybe that's the incentive you need to make different choices in your life or start making him more accountable in ways that maybe you didn't before. Because if he sees that you're suffering and he's still not changing, then something else needs to change. At least if you care about your own mental health and well-being, there might be a new direction you have to take. Thank you so much for sharing this. I wish you much strength and healing. I wish you the best through all of this. I know it's difficult. And like always, I want to give you my last piece of advice, which is to keep an open mind. This helps you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true, you are amazing.